Hey guys, popping in with a reminder to sign up for the GovHub newsletter. This weekly pop of politics is designed to share action items, resources, and quick links to civic engagement tools and topics directly to your inbox. Save it, share it, and sign up for a pinch of productive politics today by going to girlonthegov.com or visiting this episode's description.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to Girl on the Gov, the podcast,
where our goal is to make politics more accessible and less intimidating.
The show features an interview with an expert in the political field, walking us through the many cues we have about politics, civics, government, and more.
By providing civic education in the places we are, on our phones, and in the language we speak. And yes, we know we say like a lot.
It's kind of the point, because politics needed a rebrand. Welcome back to Girl on the Gov, the podcast. Reporting to you live in my trusty green crew neck that I actually feel like, Sam, I don't think I've been wearing in front of you for a very long time, right?
No, literally, until you just said that, I totally forgot about our green crew neck situation. You guys, there literally was this point in time where Maddie and I would show up to every recording and like we wouldn't talk in advance. Like, what are you wearing? Like, no game plan, anything. And the two of us would be wearing matching green sweatshirts, and not from like the same brand, same store, same location, whatever it is, but we would just always be showing up in this green. And to think that our branding is pink is like actually hilarious, which to that point we may do a green sweatshirt, so stay tuned. But literally, I don't know, we're green girlies. Like, I'm wearing green.
I love green.
Are you Irish at all?
I think I have some Irish in me, but nothing notable. But
I'm just thinking with like St. Patty's, like, yeah, you know what I mean?
We're giving St. Patty's today for
we
sure.
So are.
Also, I literally am Rudolph right now because I got somewhere. I just feel fried. But if Rudolph, green crew neck.
Honestly, it's more giving green. Christmas because Maddie also has red
nails.
Yeah,
I'm giving Christmas over here. Yeah, red nails, red nose, green sweatshirt. Yeah.
That's all she wrote.
You're giving spring, you know, though. You have a lighter green. You have the pink nails. You're giving Easter.
Honestly,
we're such good Christian girlies.
Literally, no, I always feel like such a bad Jew when I say this. And I know, and when I say bad Jew, I don't mean the good Jew, bad Jew dichotomy that the anti-Semites like to use. I mean, just genuinely like bad at my own religion is the fact that my favorite holiday is Easter because I love the color scheme and the best candy all year.
And the candy, honestly, oh my God.
Passover's got some good stuff going on too. So like, let's be real. Like, love myself a good macaroon. The jelly rings, the raspberry. I mean, they're good. But Easter candy is another level. Like, I don't think any holiday can compete. And the color scheme, again, you know I love my pastels. So.
Yeah. And we just love spring. Happy spring solstice.
Oh, yeah. That's today.
Yeah.
Also, literally, I was sitting in the sun. Amazingly, I didn't get burnt. But this is a few days ago. And it was like one of these, like, you know, super springy, warm days. I felt like a fucking electric vehicle. I felt like a Tesla. I felt like I literally plugged myself in. I was like at this like public park museum type thing where they usually have this like water feature that's super gorgeous in the summer, but like obviously it doesn't water now. And I was literally just laying there on the pavement. I was like, everyone was staring at me being like, oh, how's the sun? I was like, it's great. I'm charging. Please do not unplug me. Like, what was that? You know, that movie from Disney Channel when we were kids, I think it was like Smart Home.
Yes, Smart House.
Was that literally what it was called? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I felt. I was like, I'm her. I am glitching until I get plugged in. Like, I really.
Yeah, no. There's been some really, really lovely days of sun and warmth, and they just give me so much life. Like, I love the spring. I really do.
I mean, you know, I'm a summer girly, but I can respect that.
Well, the spring, it's just like it gears you up for summer and it's like, oh my God, summer is almost here, which is still like an ode to summer and how amazing summer is, you know?
That's true. But you know what else is giving me life as I give my like chapstick pointer finger situation? The fact that our girly, as if we know her, Paige DeSorbo, was at the White House. A week after I was there.
Absolutely fantastic. Just almost literally doing Jackie O better than Jackie O.
Mm-hmm. Literally, I saw her outfit. I was just like, slay. It's so good. And honestly, I'm a little bit jealous. Like, jealous not in a hater way. Jealous in a like, fuck, she like really, like she brought it. And now, like, that's what I wanted to kind of wear, but like in a dark black version of that little like skirt set situation. That's but so it was cute. Raining on the day I went, and it was cold.
Also, like, just so. I really love the fact that she went with the mini skirt because it was mini. And like, that's a bold move when you go to the White House. I think you always, like, people always, like, you're kind of scared to, like, to cross yeah. any type of, like, modest dress wear lines. And she said, no, I'm going to wear the mini skirt and I'm going to look good doing it. And she did. And she owned it. And I'm just.
And you know what she had there?
I loved it all.
She had a partner in crime. They're helping her with TikToks. I can just see it. And you know who wasn't there with me at the White House? Madison. So, you know what?
So Sam just really wants me around as her cameraman.
She takes great pictures. One of my hinge pics is a Maddie pic.
I do take pretty good pictures.
You do.
I do.
You do. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Just as an FYI, if you're ever around Maddie, I need a new pic. I need some.
She knows the angles. Yeah.
1,000%. For sure. And look, Maddie's a great time too. I would have loved if you were there with me for entertainment as well.
Wow, thank you so much.
You're so welcome.
That means the world. Well, to hear all about Sam's White House trip, you can listen to our episode last week where we just, it was a solo episode. Sam went to the White House. I couldn't make it. I went to South By for work, South By Southwest. We tell all of our stories there. So go listen. And we just ramble, which we don't really have time for today because we have an iconic interview with an iconic person, Representative Maxwell Frost. And we get into all the things for 2024, honestly.
Yeah.
And this is also just the beginning of our combos with Max Frost. But yeah, I'm excited for everyone to hear this one.
Totally. And here's the thing. And this is a little teaser. We really are getting in the habit of that. You know, just dangling carrots left and right. It is what it is. Or again, pick your favorite fruit, pick your favorite sweet, whatever it is in the dangling of carrot situation. Is we talk about the potential TikTok ban. But it's at the end of the episode. So
I hate when that happens.
It's what a bummer. You're going
good
to
thing
have
the rest
to
of the interview
thing.
Is also so good because I mean it's Maxwell Frost. Just what else is there to say? You know?
I was gonna say less. So
exactly. There we go.
There we go. So actually, funny side note, I learned that there's two spellings of ado, like from without further ado this week. So just FYI,
that's good to know.
And they mean different things. So grammar queens, get at it. Do what you're going to do.
What's the one that's correct for our usage?
The French spelling, the A-D-I-E-U spelling.
I think that's how the transcription pulls it. I think.
Good.
I'll double check today. But
yeah, that's literally the one thing I would just like to thank my really evil French teacher from high school for grilling into us. Mm-hmm. She was
for
awful.
Sure.
Just saying. Anyways, not to go negative.
Anyways.
Nancy, let's go positive. Let's go interview a Congress member. How about that? So
about
without further ado, French version, here is Congressman Maxwell Frost.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Let's get into this. We are here with Maxwell Frost, legendary Gen Z congressman. My God, like, how is it, first of all, being one of the youngest members out there? Like, how does that happen? Give us the tea.
Yeah, well, it's so good to be with y'all. I mean, number one, it happened because my community made it happen, right? You know, a lot of times I come up and say, you know, how'd you do it? How'd you do it? And I always say, well, like a candidate with no votes is just that, a candidate. And mm-hmm. so really, I'm here because my community believed in that. You know, I announced my campaign when I was 24. 24-year-old Afro-Cuban drummer, organizer guy, born and raised here. They believed in him and elected him. So I got have to give big props to my community because I'm not sure that my like election would be possible in every district across this country. I don't think it would be. So Orlando is a very special place. Central Florida is a very special place. I got involved in politics when I was 15 years old. So I've been involved in this for a little over a decade now. And started working full time in politics right out of high school at fresh 18. So I feel like I also, for my age, have a lot of experience that I'm really grateful for and feel privileged to have and kind of utilize that experience in my relationships to build this campaign. I was asked by some friends to run for Congress. The first thing I said was, hell no. I was like, I'm not doing that. Like, I'm too young. I'm not going to run for Congress. But, you know, sometimes people plant a seed in your mind and you like, start thinking about it, and it festered with me for months, and I decided to do it. And I guess I made the right decision because I'm with you all today.
Yeah. No, we're always trying to plant that seed in a lot of people's brains. I think it's important. We love that. I was going to ask too, like, did you ever see yourself running for office?
So sometimes it would cross my mind. Like when I was growing up, I did a lot of speech and debate. And I think like, you know, at that time is when Obama was in office. And so I would have a lot of people come up to me, adults, be like, you can be president one day. And I think they were just saying that because they saw me do a speech and Obama and I'm black and I used to have a buzz cut and all this stuff, you know. But so like people have been telling me to run for office kind of a lot of my life. But I never really wanted to do it. I guess I thought maybe in the future, but I just, you know, had other things I wanted to do. I actually wanted to work in music mainly. And I worked on in music and politics kind of at the same time, but that's what I saw myself doing. You know, I went to an art school for middle school and high school. It was a public arts magnet school. And so I was a jazz drummer there. And then I also helped plan a lot of concerts. It's part of the reason I went on to go work on music festivals. And so that was kind of my trajectory. That's what I was focused on. And I worked a campaign at Fresh 18 for Hillary in Florida. And at the end of that campaign, I was like, all right, we're going to win this. I'm going to go back to college and then I'm going to like do some music stuff. Well, we didn't win that.
Plot twist,
did not win. And then on top of that, I ended up getting hired on another campaign right after. So I ended up keeping my college online. And then those years of my life from like 18 to 24, 25, I would be working on campaigns and then in between campaigns, going to work on music festivals or music projects. And so that was kind of my life for a while.
Wow. Well, I really feel like there's such a connection between people that are interested in music and politics, as well as theater and politics, that I feel like the amount of people we talk to, they're like, oh, yeah, I was like into theater, or I also like was a musician. No. I really feel like it's an interesting crossover, and someone needs to do a study on it one day. It's probably not going to be us, but we will absolutely read
arts
through
the politics pipeline.
No, it's such a thing. Like, even if you look at, I remember right after the shooting at Parkland, you know, Marjorie Stoneman Douglas happened, a few days later was DMing with one of the students and they were like, here's an address. We're all here. Come. And I was like, well, I live in Orlando, so I'd be there in 3 hours. So I'll get there at like 1 a.m. And they were like, no, we'll still be here. So I pull up, go inside. It's all these like young people planning and organizing. I start talking with everyone and realize, wow, all the founders of this movement, they're all thespians. They're all like dense. And it just made a lot of sense to me.
Yeah. No, that totally does. I mean, politics in a lot of ways is theater. And there is so much art to how things happen. And so I'm curious for you and what you've seen being a member of Congress. What does that look like on a day to day? Like, what are the dynamics that you see at work happening amongst your colleagues?
A lot of dynamics. I kind of feel like people told me this when I was running and I was like, yeah, I'm sure I get. I would say, you know, Congress is a lot like college or high school. And I was like, yeah, I guess. Yeah, you have relationships with people. But now I'm here and I'm like, oh, my God, it is like the pettiness, you know, the friend groups, people trying to figure things out. It does like remind me a little bit of what a like high school experience would be in terms of like the social aspect. So again, the shared human experience. But, you know, there's just so much dysfunction here. But at the end of the day, I remember when I was running, you know, when you're outside of these institution or you don't know people here, you tend to think like it's a bunch of horrible people and like a few really good people, which there's, you know, there's some truth to that. There are some horrible people here. But at the end of the day, it's just like it's a bunch of, for the most part, just people you might agree or disagree with who said, I want to represent my community. And they're like, I would say most people here are trying their best. Now, I think a lot of people here are trying their best in the wrong direction, obviously. But it's kind of wild. You know, I speak with like members of the Democratic caucus and learn like, oh, wow, you used to be a meteorologist or you used to be a teacher. You used to be a nurse. And that's really what Congress should look like. I think we need to move more in that direction of having people here who aren't here because they wanted to be a member of Congress and they set this political trajectory to get here. But folks who woke up one day from whatever career they're part of, organizing or public service, whatever, and said, I want to represent my community. And that's what this job's about. Like the description of the job is in the title of the job, representative. That's what we do. We're not a mayor. We're not governors. We're not presidents. We're not chief executives. We don't make decisions like that. We're advocates. So I think it's the place for organizers and people who want to be bold and want to fight.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm also just thinking like High School Musical. Congress edition, just saying. But sorry, Maddie, go ahead.
Honestly, that would be a great movie. Call up Kenny Ortega immediately. No, I was going to ask, like, so going back to like the age thing, because you're the first representative of this whole generation. What was it like first entering this arena and the Hill? And I'm curious if like the perceptions of you being a young person were good and everyone was impressed by you, or were there like people who kind of look down on you in ways? Like, I'm just curious on that age piece, and especially because, you know, we haven't had young representation in Congress before like this. So curious your experience.
Yeah. I mean, it's a few things. Like I'd say, first off, there's a lot of people who came before me who made it possible for me to be here and not just be here and exist in these halls, but be here. And, you know, I think we've had a really successful freshman term thus far and been able to get through some big things. Like, you know, the first bill I introduced was create a federal office of gun violence prevention. It's hard to create like a federal office like that in your first term in the minority. But the president took my piece of legislation and implemented it via executive order. And now we have it. And I was with him at the White House when he put that into action. So like these things don't just happen. And it's not just because of me. Like obviously our office played a huge role in it, but it's because of organizers, advocates, and the folks who came before me who made it possible for a very young freshman member of the minority to be able to still get things done. And like, you know, I'm part of leadership for certain caucuses. I'm on the House Oversight Committee, which is like probably one of the most public-facing committees. And so you think about people like, you know, young people who came before me, people like AOC, right, who like helped pave the way for young people. Or you think about the fact that I'm Afro-Latino. Someone like Richie Torres, you know, when he came in, there was a big kind of public drama around him being a part of the Black caucus and Hispanic caucus. Because he went through that, I didn't have to. And you know what? I just signed up for both and I was in both. I didn't go through a big drama. And it just shows that like the people who've come before us are really important in our journeys. And sometimes we think about those people, and we think, oh, it's just the old folks or just our ancestors, which they are. But it's also going to be people who are close to you in age who are just like right there with you, who have done some things that kind of opened that pathway. So
totally.
I feel good here. I feel respected. Now, do people like look down on me behind my back? Probably, of course. Yeah.
100%. That's the high school aspect coming back. 100%.
But, you know, part of it is we live in this society now, especially over the last, if you look in the last 6 years, the way people think about young people's role in politics has shifted. Because of March for Our Lives or Dream Defenders or Black Lives Matter, like these huge movements led by young people. So I would say in our party, it would be distasteful to publicly be like, yeah, we don't need this young person here because they're young. You know, a lot of people would boo that and would say like, that's not in line with our democratic values. And so I think probably some people have some like, you know, kind of bigoted opinions because I'm young, but like the environment pushes them to kind of keep it, you know, in the background.
Totally.
Yeah. Under the surface and all of those things. Well, I want to flip to young people in Florida, which is the state that you're from, obviously Orlando area. What is the vibe on the ground? Obviously, what we've seen in Florida with DeSantis is insanity and has really sort of stirred the pot in so many ways, obviously legislatively, but even in terms of how people are feeling about politics in the state and what they can do or not do. What really, you know, is the young people vibe and reaction on the ground there?
Yeah, well, you know, people are very demoralized in our state right now. We are being governed by like a very far right wing movement that, you know, the buck stops with DeSantis in our state, but it really is a movement across the state of local electeds, state representatives, and all these people who want to consolidate power for one person. And that person's using that power to kind of oppress certain groups of people. And so that's kind of what's going on right now. We see it with the Don't Say Gay law, right? We see it with a book banning in our state, the rollback of gun laws in our state, the attacks on unions in our state, the attacks on the ability for localities to do anything about housing in our state. Like, there's so much going on right now that really has this authoritarian bend. And we've done a lot to try to prevent it. And we've been successful in some parts and we haven't been successful in a lot of them. And so that leads people to kind of take a step back and say, like, what the hell is going on? And you've seen this like an exodus of immigrants and queer people from the state of Florida to other states because they're scared for their lives. And I always like to tell people, like, we hear people talk about Florida, they talk about culture wars, which, yes, that's a big part of it, but it's not just a culture war. There's like real violence going on in our state right now that is encouraged and supported by people like Ron DeSantis. So that's like the context.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Despite all of that, we're still a state of millions and millions of like poor and working class people who are just like want to live. And we love our state. You know, I love the state of Florida. It's my home. Like, I love Orlando. It's my home. So yeah, a lot of young people are demoralized with the state of Florida, but they're fighting back. And we see it in movements across the entire state. We see it in young people running for office. We see a lot of mutual aid going on, direct action, protests, et cetera, because everyone has a different way of being involved in this thing that we're doing. And that gives me a lot of hope. We have, look at the last two special elections in Florida, Democrats who flipped red seats to blue seats, the biggest city in Florida, Jacksonville. Flip from a red mayor to a blue one, Donna Deegan. In Orlando, Florida, we had a special election just a few months ago. We elected Tom Keene. DeSantis won that seat by like over 12 points just like last year. And this year, Tom Keene won by, I think, like 4 or 5. So it just shows that like we're going in the right direction. The cards are stacked up against us. It's hard as hell. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
But we're still fighting and we're moving forward. And I think we're going to see, hopefully, the youth vote go up in Florida. The youth vote across the country is actually doing good and it's going up. In Florida, it's actually a little different. It hasn't been the best traditionally. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that people are demoralized, but hopefully
we can
like get out there and get people out to vote and engaged after they vote too.
Totally. That's so important. Yeah. I mean, especially after these special election flips and going into this humongous election year 2024. What are you seeing in terms of energy in the state, be it the presidential, but also just down the ticket of like what kind of you're hopeful about given this momentum that you're feeling in the state?
So I'm going to tell you what I think is really possible in our state. And I don't like to lie to people about this stuff because I think, you know, politicians lying for a long time is part of the reason why half of this country doesn't vote. So I'm going to to be very honest. So what I think is possible in the short term in our state. So short term means this cycle or a few cycles, right? And cycle being, every election year is I think we can break the Republican supermajority in the legislature. I think that's a really possible thing. We cannot get the majority in the legislature, at least within this decade, because of horrible gerrymandering. And I encourage people to like look at these maps and look at the fact that Florida for a long time has traditionally been like pretty split between Democrats and Republicans, a true battleground state. But even far before this last election cycle, our seats have been gerrymandered to hell. I mean, it is crazy how underrepresented Democrats are in the House. So keeping that in mind, we can break the supermajority, which is really helpful because it gives us more of a leg up in the legislature. So that's something we can do. For instance, we got like 4 seats that President Biden won in Orlando, in Central Florida, that are currently held by Republicans. Tom Keene seat used to be one of them. So we flip all of those. We worked at breaking that supermajority. Second thing is I think we can win statewide. I think we can put a Democratic governor in place. And that's really helpful because that veto pen we needed to like veto stuff like don't say gay and all these like neo-fascist laws we're seeing being passed from the legislature. And also having a governor, a chief executive of our state that runs the state in a way that is going to center everybody, I think is really helpful. So I think that's possible. And then the third thing that's really possible is winning these ballot initiatives, you know. And so we see like in the state of Florida, it's weird because our state voted for DeSantis, you know, by the tune of like 19 points, but we overwhelmingly are for progressive ballot initiatives. In the last 3 cycles, Florida has passed a $15 minimum wage. We did that. Over 60% of Floridians did that. Over 60% of Floridians said yes to medical marijuana. Recently, over 60% of Floridians said yes to giving people with prior felonies another chance and being able to go vote. That was recent. And now this year, I think abortion is going to be on the ballot too. And it's polling really high right now too. And adult use marijuana. So I think we can pass progressive ballot initiatives to make Florida a better place to live. So those are 3 things that I think are possible. Oh, and winning down ballot, city councils, school boards, county commissions, everything like that. I'm really engaged in down ballot races too, because it's like, it's really important. Like, this isn't the Maxwell Frost show in Orlando. You know, it's going to require like an apparatus of people who like we all believe in, we all have shared values and we can kind of move as a unit versus all these elected in different offices doing their own thing. That doesn't work. The movement has to be outside and inside too.
Totally. And I think the Republicans have been better in years past at moving as a unit, which is sort of like what we see now, even for better or for worse, obviously not in the right direction or like how we feel about it. But, you know, they do all come together and their unity is a strength in terms of their strategy. I do want to flip back to the supermajority element. For those that might not know why breaking a supermajority is so important, can you give us the lay of the land and explain that a little bit?
So essentially, you know, you have a party that's in the majority and that's in the minority. So the majority would be like if you have one more person in the House of Representatives, you'd be in the majority. Right now in the U.S. Congress, Republicans have a majority, very slim one, very slim, which means there's not a lot of room for error. If there's a few Republicans, I think right now it's like 2 or 3. If 2 or 3 Republicans join Democrats on a bill, we could pass the bill. And that's not a place that you want to be if you're in the majority, because it means that you really have to have everybody in line. And that can be hard, especially these days. So if you have a super majority, that means you have so many more people than the minority party that has in that body that you can steamroll anything you want without even talking with the Democrats, without even talking with the party that's in the minority. You don't even need to care about what they say, what they do. They can blab all they want, but you have so many more people than they do that you could lose a few and it doesn't matter. You're getting what you want passed. So that's why it's so important, is it gives us more of a voice, because if the more that that majority is slim, the more that our voices are respected and heard and included in the legislating process. But right now in Tallahassee and Florida, Democrats don't have enough of a voice to change the damn temperature of the building, like let alone legislation. And the reason why is because they outnumber us by so much, they don't even need to listen to us. They don't even need to engage with us. And I'm not saying they don't at all. Sometimes they do. But when you break the supermajority, it gives you the ability to do even more. And in our state right now, we need every damn point of light we can get. Like it's Tallahassee's the front lines right now, and our school boards in the state of Florida.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you said you weren't going to lie, I legit was like, oh God, here we go. This is going to be a doomsday reporting, but that all sounds very exciting. And
it's exciting. It is exciting. Like, you know, we have a lot of challenges. It's going to take time. That's the other thing. People are like, we're in this mindset, kind of as a society, to be honest about everything, but especially in politics, that we want to see results now in terms of elections. So you have donors or people who organize who say, if I get involved in this and we don't win, that means we've failed and we need to move everything and change everything. And sometimes that's true. Sometimes you need to double back and change strategy. but it doesn't mean you change investment or the fact that you were involved in the first place. And so I'm trying to set a standard here because I don't want people to see us possibly and possibly, you know, very possibly not win Florida in the way we want to, and then I'll lose all hope in the state. Like, this is going to take some time to get to where we were and then to eventually win. And we're here to do it. You know, God willing, I have, you know, a lot of, you know, of many extra years on this earth that I will use to fight for my state and what I believe in. There's a lot of people just like me. So I just like this. I like this.
It's so true.
You know?
Totally. It's so true, too. We're a broken record when we just always are saying politics is a long game. And it just, you have to keep chipping away every year. And that also goes for off your years. And, you know, calling representatives and still doing the work post-election. Yeah, it's, you just got to keep chipping away. But unfortunately, we want to talk about this federal election a little bit with you. And talk a little bit about the youth vote. I mean, we're seeing like poll after poll be pretty negative. I'm curious to take your pulse on what you're seeing and feeling and thinking. Yeah, we'll start there.
Yeah. Well, I'm part of the minority of people who actually, I think polls are actually very useful if you understand what they are, right? Like, it's not a magic ball that says on November 4th or 6th, whatever election day is this year, this will happen. But what it does tell you is just, you know, a snapshot in time, what would happen if the election were held now? What might happen if the election were held now? And I think that's really important to know, because once you fully understand what a poll is and you don't overblow it or undersell it, it gives you the ability to do better in your campaign. And so, you know, yes, I've seen some very concerning polls as far as the president's reelection efforts concerned. I'm part of the president's national advisory committee for his campaign, and have and will be doing a lot more traveling to help make sure that we, you know, keep neo-fascist right-wing Christian nationalist Donald Trump out of office this year. And the polls tell us a few things. They've been trending in a better direction, which is good for us. It was very, very concerning there for a minute and still concerning, but we're getting in a better place. As far as the youth vote is concerned, obviously, it keeps fluctuating in big ways. But what I've seen is that young people are concerned about a lot of different issues going on, both domestically and internationally. And I think it's important that we speak to those issues, but that we meet people where they're at. And I think oftentimes there's a lot going on right now. And, you know, sometimes there's a hesitancy to engage with young people because you're afraid of what they'll say or what they'll do. And what I've always encouraged my colleagues to do, and the campaign too, is like walk into the fire, you know, walk into places where you might be a little uncomfortable and connect with folks. Number one, you're going to have a lot of conversations that might surprise you, that will surprise you, because young people are not a monolith. Not everyone agrees on the same thing. But number two, you gain respect from people when you have the ability to like come into a space and debate with them or talk with them about an issue that you care about. And it shows that you care about them. It's not just about inviting young people to your table, but it's about you going to theirs, whether that's a college campus, community college, concerts, wherever young people are at. And I think that's really important. So we're getting close to election day. I'm not going to say we have so much time, but we do have time here to kind of course correct and get to a better place. And, you know, the administration is listening to young people, which I think is really helpful. And we gotta keep in mind what's at stake here. Like, I like to get really personal with people from an organizing perspective to explain this. We talked about my first bill, Federal Office of Gun Violence Prevention. Such a dope office. It's not just like an office, right? Like, I'm not the type to go to the White House just for like a photo op, right? Like, this office is real. And the first thing I asked when they told me about it was, awesome, who's going to run it? They have survivors of gun violence who have been doing this work. Someone like Greg Jackson, who's a good friend of mine, he was the former executive director of Community Justice Action Fund, the only really national gun violence prevention organization that's Black-led and centers the experiences of Black and brown people. And he's the deputy director of that office. That office helped me get $1.5 million for the city of Orlando's Community Violence Intervention Program. What's Community Violence Intervention? Well, I'm glad you asked. What it is they're programs that put money into the hands of the community. So that way community members can identify who's more likely to be shot and who's more likely to shoot someone. And they literally intervene, creating relationships with shooters, with gang members, with people who a lot of times, you know, are part of a lot of the violence in our communities. And they work at breaking the cycle of violence. In my city of Orlando, since this program has started, we've seen gun violence go down. And so we want to continue to fund those programs. When I was on the streets of Orlando, you know, for the Black Lives Matter protests, where I was tear gassed, maced, arrested, I was jailed in my district for nonviolent protests. Part of what I was fighting for was community involvement and control and public safety, right? That's really what we're fighting for, invest in our communities. President Biden's done that with the Office of Gun Violence Prevention. If President Trump were elected, guess what he would do on day one? Get rid of the office. It would just not exist anymore. That money would go away. The resources would go away. And I take that really personally. That alone is enough for me personally to like go all in on this election. But there's like a million, let me not say a million there, but there are many, many, many examples of that same thing happening that can really impact all of our communities. So I say that, you know, I'm not the type of person to shame people for not wanting to vote. I get it. Our system sucks and there's a lot wrong with it, but our adversaries in this moment and our opponents want us to walk away because they're more than happy to step in. And that's where we keep.
1,000%. Say it again for people in the back is all I can say on that one.
Yeah.
And to that, I think where, you know, is a great capping moment is for us, you know, we see so many people, especially on TikTok, that are just not excited about Biden. And our messaging back is kind of similar to yours of like, okay, like this shouldn't even be a competition thinking about what we can do with our current administration and extending it versus absolute orange nutcase. Like it's just apples and oranges in what we have here. But again, sometimes those arguments seem to fall on deaf ears. And I'm curious what you say to somebody that isn't excited to vote for Biden is sort of like, you know, hands in the air about it. What is your messaging there?
Yeah. And like the first thing I like to do is like validate people's where people are coming from. I think a lot of times, you know, a really difficult pill to swallow in our country, especially as Gen Z, we're the most progressive generation in the history of our country, very in tune with vulnerable communities, very impatient and wanting like a better world, which I don't think is like, I think it's a pro. And we're just like badass. But it makes it difficult to swallow this pill, which is our system is set in a way where we are given very binary choices, especially at the presidential level. We can complain about it. I complain about, you know, I've done a lot of traveling last year to countries where there's multiple parties and you see a lot of, I don't know, it feels like a lot of their systems work in a better way than ours do, even though there's multiple parties and it gives people the opportunity for collaboration without feeling guilty with working with other people. You actually see more bipartisanship, but we're not going to have like a multi-party system tomorrow, this year, next year, or in a few years. If that's something you want to work towards, you have to build political power and political will to make that happen. If you step away, it'll never happen. Okay. But right now, it's super binary. And I think a lot of frustration we're seeing around voting for the president in this election is I think a lot of people are just frustrated with the fact that you get like two choices and that's it. And I get that. But it also is the situation as it is now. I believe, from my vantage point, the things I've seen, that President Biden is eons better than President Trump on every issue I care about. And for me, it's not too much of a lesser of two evils kind of thing, because I've seen like the work save lives in my community. And that's really important to me. But if that's the place where you're at, what I encourage people to do is really think about this think about it like an organizer, right? In the organizing world, you don't often get the opportunity to pick your landscape and your battlefield. And when you do, you really want to be fully involved in it, because that will help determine the wins you get and what you can do. I think about any issue. I mean, you know, there's a lot of things on people's, on young people's minds right now, whether it's what's going on in Gaza and in Israel and Gaza, whether it's climate change, whether it's gun violence. Like, think about the fact that we have a president now that your actions, your protests, the work that you do can actually have influence, versus like if you have someone like Donald Trump in office, not only will you not be able to influence what he's doing or saying, But in fact, any protests you do will probably encourage him to go in the opposite direction.
And he's saying that he would, you know, ban protesting. And he's
literally saying that he doesn't. Yeah. I mean, just the other day, what he was on a hot mic moment saying, when Kim Jong-un speaks, his people sit at attention. I want the same thing for my people, for our people. Yeah. I mean, he's a literal authoritarian. He said, you know, so my Angela quote, when people tell you who they are, believe them the first time. Mm-hmm. He literally said, I'll be a dictator on day one. So these are the two options. And I don't want to like belabor the point because I think most people understand that these are the options, to be honest. And I think people are just frustrated with the system. But I would just encourage people to think about, especially if you're young, like this is going to be Joe Biden's last election. And for a lot of us, it's going to be your first or your second. And it's going to determine your third, your fourth, your fifth, and whether or not you have third, fourth, and fifth.
Right. And so true.
We take that, we move forward with it. It's okay to not be super excited about a candidate. I've worked for a lot of candidates I wasn't super excited about. But think about it as an organizer. Like, how do we get the world we want? Someone like Donald Trump will bring us back very far. Yeah. Let me just look
at it. I mean, it's not a choice between two different like candidates and two different people. It's a choice between two completely different futures of either one where like you can still protest and have your voice heard, or you literally can't and you will literally lose that right and lose all your freedoms. I agree. It's like, I totally get people's frustration with the system. There's obviously this third party movement momentum happening right now as well. And it's just, I agree with you. It's just, we're not there yet. And it's like, we're in a moment where we have to make this decision this year to be able to build that power for the future, to be able to make those bigger systemic changes.
What I'll tell people too is like, if you want to work the third party angle, do it. Just know though that there are huge implications and vulnerabilities and risks that comes with doing that at the presidential level. And it's also not how third parties are created. If you just look in the history of how parties are created in other countries, in Latin American countries, like if you don't feel represented by either party, build a third party, but you must start at the local level. That's how you build like some sort of third party. Do not, you know, try to do it at the presidential level, because not only are you going to not be successful in the current system we have, but you could really have an impact that could mess us up and like elect a Donald Trump or something like that. And I think it's important to know that. I think a lot of times people would say they're accelerationists, where they just want to everything like the next moment and they'll do it by any means necessary. That's not part of my theory of change. And I think it harms our most vulnerable communities. And so thinking about that, it's like, yeah, you can vote for President Biden because you hate Donald Trump. Maybe you're not super excited about President Biden and still, you know, run a candidate or work as a candidate for city council in a third party and like and build something like that. And you have a better chance of getting elected and you can still caucus with Democrats. Like there's ways to do the things people want to do. But I think oftentimes, number one, there's a lot of grift associated with this kind of thing. And unfortunately, a lot of people get caught up into the grift. But for the real serious organizers, like look at something like the Working Families Party.
Look into Working Families Party. That's what they're doing.
Exactly. I'm proud to be a Working Families Party candidate. I'm also a Democrat. Working Families Party is running some third party candidate nationally. Why? Because number one, they're staffed with a ton of like organizers who get this. But they run city council candidates. Look at Philly. They have two Working Family Party candidates on the Philly City Council. They vote with Democrats a lot, but they also have a different perspective and will do their own thing too. And it didn't risk Donald Trump. So like, I look at Working Families Party. I'm a huge
fan.
So yeah.
Yes, I was literally going to say that. It's so funny. And they have that long-term plan of like eventually getting there where like they could put somebody up at the top of the ticket. And it's just, again, it's timing, unfortunately. And yeah, I think we're so used to like this instant gratification of wanting things now, which I totally agree. I don't think is necessarily a con, because it's ultimately just wanting a better life.
Yeah. I mean, life is about hard choices. This election is it. So like, to me, I'm a little bit like out of empathy. But at this point, you know, I do think like the long term game for like figuring out third party candidates and whatnot, when especially on TikTok, the RFK Jr. praise is quite insane. And I actually did like a video yesterday of like going through his website. It was like, there's nothing on here about gun violence, not a single tab on gun violence. There's not a single tab on abortion here, maternal health. Like they're all these issues that young people care so much about are not being represented there. And so I just think that there's so much like wrongly directed energy towards a candidate that might pick Aaron Rodgers as his vice president. So, you know, it's just those little things. It's called living in 2024, which is always a wild, wild ride that I couldn't have looked at a magic eight ball and seen coming. But without my rant aside, I'm curious of one last question, and that is really trickling back to something I was just saying, which is TikTok. We have this little ban situation up in the air, you know, obviously being thrown around like a football of some sort. It's definitely not a football I throw, because I throw a perfect spiral, just saying. But I'm curious, like, what the lay of the land is actually for you guys, what you see happening in the Senate with this TikTok ban, all the things.
Yeah. So I voted against the TikTok ban and was pretty vocal about it. Let's take a few steps back. Like, number one, this bill comes and, you know, to defend my colleagues a little bit, because I know a lot of people have been getting a lot of hate online for
Jeff
their
vote.
for their votes on the bill. And what I'll say is this, the foundation of it, at least I don't want to say for everybody, but for a lot of people, comes from like a really good place that I agree with, actually. And like, so the concern is, TikTok gathers a lot of our data, and the parent company is pretty much falls under the rules and laws of the Chinese Communist Party in Beijing, because it is a Chinese owned company. And I think the concern is, you know, the laws in China with this government state, like if they want data on any American, they can direct the company to give it to them, and they have to, because they fall under the laws of the CCP. And that is concerning, like 100%. That's very concerning. But we have no evidence that that's happened thus far. But it could happen. So I think that's like the first thing, is like it could happen. Hey, that's concerning to me. However, I'm on the same token, I'm also concerned about domestic companies and American mm-hmm. companies, and how they take all of our data, and how they take our data, and sometimes it's sold. Or these data brokers sell the data to other countries anyway. So I felt weird that, you know, we were just targeting TikTok specifically. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that, you know, the Republicans here in Congress have been very hawkish on China, and a lot of Democrats are. And I think it's like just this whole new talking point and thing. And I like what President Biden said in the State of the Union. Like, look, the goal here is we don't want conflict with China, but we want competition. But we see a lot of people who are pushing this like conflict narrative, which is not where we want to go, especially in this kind of new world we're all building together. So would I like TikTok to be owned by a different company that's not like under like the CCP? You know, yes. Yeah, 100%. But my problem, I have a lot of problems with the TikTok bill. Number one, you know, Congress tried to make this little like, I don't know, kind of curve around it, saying, well, it's not a TikTok ban, it's a for sale. Well, let's look at the facts here. Number one, TikTok's a big ass company. So giving them 6 months to sell that company is not really realistic. Minimum is 6 months for selling a big company like this. The second thing is that, let's say they were able to find a buyer, which, by the way, the amount of people that can buy TikTok is so small. It's not like anyone can go, yeah, let me buy TikTok today. Like, it's going to be expensive, that only a certain group of people are going to be able to buy it. And a lot of them are going to be already existing large social media companies, which means that if Meta or Elon or whoever wanted to buy TikTok, it would trigger antitrust laws, which are like laws that keep us from having big corporate monopolies in our country, which are very important. A lot of these laws automatically trigger pauses so the Department of Justice can investigate to see if the monopoly is, you know, if there would be a monopoly, which is important. We saw this just happen with JetBlue's attempted acquisition of Spirit Airlines, and it was the DOJ sued and it didn't happen. So the minimum pause would be a month for something like this, which means we're actually giving them 5 months, not six. So you see how like this for sale is kind of setting them up for failure here.
Yeah.
And so when you think about it that way, I'm not saying they would fail, but it's setting them up for failure, which means that it would essentially mean TikTok is banned. Now, whether it's banned for a month or a year or forever, I don't know, but a ban is a ban. to meet, whether it's a week or a year or whatever. And TikTok, you know, a lot of small businesses use it in the United States. 170 million Americans are on it. People find a lot of joy from it. There's a lot of freedom of expression and speech. And I just like think it's a pretty rash decision to say, do this, or we're going to take this away from 170 million Americans. I think it violates our First Amendment rights, and that doesn't fix the problem that we're seeing with all social media. So I'm like, let's do a bill to fix data privacy for all social media. Let's do a bill to prevent data brokers from selling our data to foreign adversaries, which I'm all down for. And let's do that and let's fix it for everything. But instead, we're focusing on TikTok and all this shit. And I do think there's a lot of Republicans who voted for it, not just because of the data stuff, but because, you know, like ending this war on, or this war on woke and TikTok's woke and all this, like, but either way, what's going to happen? It passed the House. It goes to the Senate now. Let's see what happens in the Senate. I was, to be transparent, I was more, optimistic last week or 2 weeks ago that the Senate would reject it. Little less now. There's a lot more senators coming out in favor of it. The president said he would sign it. I've, you know, encouraged them not to. I think it's not a good decision. So we'll see. And does look a little, I would put, you know, if I were betting, I'd probably put a little bit more. Let me not use betting as an example, but I would give more of a percent chance to it passing, though, than I would it failing, unfortunately. But let's see. And then if it does pass, they'll have 6 months to sell the company to an owner that's not, you know, doesn't reside in a foreign adversarial country, which is like Russia, China, Iran, and one more. And if it doesn't, it'll be banned in the United States. Wow. So we'll see.
Silly question.
We will see.
If say it passes and then they have this like 6 month countdown, is the app still available for people? Like, are you still on the app until that 6 month window, or is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's fine for that 6 months. But if it doesn't move to a different owner by the end of the 6 months, a few things happen. Number one, it becomes illegal for any app stores to carry it. So it'll be deleted from app stores. But then you think, well, what about all the accounts and all, you know, I've seen a lot of TikTokers say, who's going to come and delete it from my phone? No one's going to delete it from your phone. But what's going to happen is the bill puts a fine on TikTok of $5,000 per user. With 170 million users, that's a ton of money. So what would happen is TikTok would disable your account if you're in the United States. That's most likely what would happen. So you'd probably still have the app on your phone, but you wouldn't be able to use it. And, you know, if you've ever used like HBO Max or something in an area that doesn't have it, you get a notification that says like not available in this region right now. I don't know if that's how it would work, but something similar could happen. So no one's going to delete the app from your phone, but your account might not, you might not be able to use it if it notices you're in the United States. So that's what would happen. I wonder
if you go on vacation out of the country, you get a little TikTok fix.
maybe.
Interesting. Well, we will see what happens with that. Pretty crazy. Just the kind of journey also this TikTok ban has gone on, from kind of Trump starting it and now jumping against it. And it's very interesting, but we will see. Thank you so much for coming on. This is super exciting. We've been so excited to have you on and been wanting to have you on for forever. And so we just appreciate your time and running through all of this with us.
Of course. Thank you. So good to meet y'all.
Likewise. Hey guys, popping in with a reminder to sign up for the GovHub newsletter. This weekly pop of politics is designed to share action items, resources, and quick links to civic engagement tools and topics directly to your inbox. Save it, share it, and sign up for a pinch of productive politics today by going to girlonthegov.com or visiting this episode's description.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.